Welcome to Take Note on WPSU. I'm Patty Satalia. With the primaries falling on May 20th, we're turning our attention for the next several weeks to the race for governor. Today, we'll talk with two of the four candidates vying to secure the Democratic Party's nomination and a chance to unseat Republican Governor Tom Corbett. WPSU's Christine Allen talks with Katie McGinty, a former secretary of the Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection under Ed Rendell. But first, WPSU's Emily Reddy sat down with York businessman and front runner Tom Wolf. Wolf put $10 million of his own money into his campaign so far and has flooded the television airwaves with ads.
Tom Wolf, thank you for talking with us.
Sure.
So up until now, you've primarily been a businessman. You got a PhD at MIT, then returned home to York to work at and then run the family business. You spent a couple of years as Governor Ed Rendell's Secretary of Revenue. But other than that, you don't have much political experience. Why do you think you'd be a good governor for Pennsylvania?
Well, actually, I have a lot of leadership and executive experience, and I think that's what fits me for this. And I think that's what the governor's job is. When I was Secretary of Revenue, what impressed me was not how different life in Harrisburg was, but how similar it was to executive positions I've held and leadership positions I've held in a lot of different contexts. So you mentioned some of them, but I was also a Peace Corps volunteer, and at the age of 19, 20, and 21, I was actually leading people to make decisions as to how they were going to cultivate rice when I was in business. I built a business from 1986 to 2006, and then I went back in 2009, and I built it all over again. So I've had a long career of actually changing things, of doing things, of building, and I think those are the skills that are most necessary in Harrisburg. And when I was Secretary of Revenue, that's what I found, that people in Harrisburg responded to the same leadership skills that people in business, people in the Peace Corps, even people in academia responded to. So I think my background actually is exactly what we need, unless we want a governor who is just going to keep the seat warm and not do anything. My life has been about doing things, and I think that's what we need in our next governor.
And that business you said you went back to in 2009, you had planned to run for governor in 2010, but found out that the family business which you had sold was facing bankruptcy. Why did you decide to go back to that business?
Well, that's a good point. I didn't have to. I was retired and had sold the business. And I went back because I knew the people who were going to lose their jobs. I knew the people whose families were going to be affected. And so I really didn't have a choice. These were people I grew up with. I knew them really well, and you just don't abandon people that you know and like.
There's a recent poll from Franklin and Marshall College that finds you have a 27-point lead in the Democratic field for governor, but almost half of registered Democrats are still undecided. You and the other Democratic candidates have the same stance on a fair number of issues. What do you think separates you from the other candidates and makes you the right one for the job?
Well, as I said before, I think it's my story. I think you're right on specific issues that tend to be hot-button issues for Democrats. We are the same. But my story and my background is different. And I think that's what people see as I go around the state and talk to people. They like that I'm a different, an unconventional candidate. They like that I was a Peace Corps volunteer. They like that I've been in business, that I was an academic, that I actually have some experience in the state. They like that I have an experience, a life of actually doing things. And they like the fact that I've done things well and right. They like that I share 20-30% of my net profit with my employees. No one else does that. They like that I drive a Jeep. They like that I contributed a lot, not only my time, but financial resources back to the community throughout my life. And I think as they look forward to this hiring decision that they're going to make, they see 2014 as a time when they want someone who has not only done things well, but done things right. You can talk about, you know, four or so key sets of issues that you're going to anticipate, but there'll be hundreds, if not thousands, of decisions you're going to have to make. And I think they want to know that whoever's going to be making those decisions is going to be making them in the same way, with a level of competence that they can trust, and also that there's going to be a moral compass involved in making those decisions. And that's what they see in me.
There would be a lot of decisions, a lot of issues, but, you know, if you are elected, what would be your first priority as governor of Pennsylvania?
Well, my first priority would be the first day on the job, I will sign two executive orders dealing with issues of ethics. First is to create a gift ban, to say no thank you rule to everybody appointed by me in the executive branch. And second, I would sign an executive order opening up, making more transparent and fair the issuing of legal contracts. But in terms of the broader issues that I would have to work with the legislature on, there are really four. The first has to do with education. The second has to do with transportation, creating a 21st century transportation infrastructure. Third has to do with taking full and environmentally responsible advantage of our natural resource, the shale gas. And finally, I would work hard, as I said, with some executive orders, working legislatively and, if necessary, even proposing some constitutional amendments that would level the playing field, make the rules of engagement fairer in Pennsylvania, from the tax code to ethics rules to even governance rules, how we do our redistricting. All those things, I think, have to be looked at to make our democracy fairer and better.
Now, you mentioned Marcellus shale fracking. What do you think of the current regulations and severance fee levels, and what? How would you change them, if at all?
I would propose a 5% severance tax to replace the impact fee that would send some money back to the localities, would be used to fund regulations that are in place and just not being enacted or enforced. And I would want to look at other regulations that we would want to put into place to make sure that we are doing the best possible thing for our environment, to make sure that we're protecting the environment as well as possible. I would also want to spend a lot of that money on education.
I mean, are there places other than that you would go to restore money to education, to both higher education and to public schools?
Oh, yeah. I've talked about, in addition to the severance tax, reorienting priorities in our general fund budget. We've spent a lot of money. Jack Wagner, when he was Auditor General, said that between $300 and $400 million a year was going to fund alternative educational institutions at the primary to secondary level. Many of the institutions we're funding simply aren't working, and so there's a lot of money there to restore some of the cuts that the Corbett administration made. Again, the severance tax would be a source of funding. Third thing that I would do is I think we need to reorient the source of funding so that localities are not forced to shoulder such a big share of the burden. Right now, the state only funds about 32% to 34% of the funding for public education. The rest, most of the rest, there's some federal funding, but most of the rest is made up by the local share. And that does a couple of things that are bad. First of all, creates huge disparities between the poorer and wealthier school districts, so that your zip code actually matters in terms of the educational outcome. The second thing it does is it sets up conflicts between people who would be ordinarily predisposed to support public education, and that's a function of the huge reliance we have on the local property tax. So the third thing I would do is shift the burden back to a 50% share on average for the state. I know Governor Rendell tried to do that, never really got to that point, but if we were able to accomplish that, that would produce a mathematical reduction in the property tax burden that most Pennsylvanians are facing. And then finally, and this is not hard political or public policy, but it's using the bully pulpit of the governor. In my lifetime, I don't remember anybody standing up and actually reminding us why we support education as a public, not a private good. Not only do I care about the education my two daughters received in the public schools in York County, but I care about the education the child receives at State College or Philadelphia or Pittsburgh or Erie, because if they get a good education, chances are greater that I'm going to have a good life. The probability that they're going to come up with a cure for a disease that I care about is greater, or a technology that will make my life better is better. If they get a good education. And the reverse is also true. We all share in the consequences of not delivering on the promise of a good education. You have to make sure you're investing in it. You have to make sure that you're doing what you can to follow through on the promise we've made in our Constitution to give every child a thorough and efficient education.
And what about state and state-related colleges and universities like Penn State?
Higher education is huge in Pennsylvania. I think Pennsylvania has the second largest number of seats, higher education seats and students of any state in the United States. I think we're second only to New York. So this is a big resource for us. This is a big deal, and we have some of the greatest institutions in the world, like Penn State, for example. And so the state has to be a partner in making sure that we have a higher education system that continues to be excellent and one that is affordable. We're not doing a very good job on that latter thing, and so I think the state has to figure out how to play a bigger role in making sure that these institutions of higher education become affordable for the students who come to take advantage of them.
Switching gears a little bit here, you've put about $10 million of your own money into your campaign so far. When John Hanger pulled out of the primary, he called it an obscene money orgy. Rob McCord called the amount of money you've spent troubling. How do you react to those statements?
Yeah, I think that money should play less of a role in Democratic politics. Unfortunately, I am not a career politician, and I had no other way to get my name out but to tell my story. Now, typically, people who have the wherewithal to tell their story don't do well in politics. The money gives them the ability to present their case, but the ultimate verdict is rendered by the voters, and the voters typically have not been kind to people who have put a lot of their own money into the race because I think they're legitimately concerned about the role of money. I think my story works, and I presented it, and the ultimate poll, of course, is going to be May 20th. But up to now, people like the story that I have. In this case, the rules do allow for someone like me to present my case in a way that I couldn't if I didn't have the money. But those are the way the rules are right now, and I'm playing by those rules. And by the way, one of the things I would propose as governor is to put real campaign finance reform into place. We don't have any real rules in Pennsylvania. We don't have very many rules. And I would do everything in my power to make sure that money plays a less important role in politics than it does now.
On your website, you say creating jobs is job one. How would you create jobs?
Well, I've already told you that my idea is that the state has a strong role in setting the table for economic development, and I want Pennsylvania to be a magnet for the entrepreneurs who will create good paying jobs in Pennsylvania, and I think the state, the Commonwealth, needs to do the few things that it does. It needs to do those things very well, and I mentioned them before. Education, we've got to figure out how to deliver on the promise of a good education. Transportation is especially important in Pennsylvania, connecting the regions together and taking full advantage of our status as the Keystone State and smack dab in the middle of one of the richest markets in the world. Third, we've got to take advantage of the responsibly from an environmental point of view, but take full advantage of the natural resource that lies beneath us. That could be a game changer for our economy if we do it right. And fourth, we've got to make sure that we have a level playing field so that we're attractive to people who are going to come to Pennsylvania and create jobs and produce fresh, innovative, new ideas.
Governor Corbett has a 36% approval rating, but incumbency is a huge advantage. Pennsylvania hasn't ousted an incumbent governor since 1971. What makes you think you can buck that trend?
Yeah, I'm not a politician. I have not done this before, and I'm not in this because of any ideas about a horse race. I don't know. I'm doing this because I think Pennsylvania needs to do better, and I'm hoping that people think I'm a better candidate and have better ideas for Pennsylvania's future.
Tom Wolf, thank you for talking with me.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
That was WPSU's Emily Reddy with York businessman and Democratic gubernatorial frontrunner Tom Wolf. If you're just joining us, this is Take Note on WPSU. I'm Patty Satalia. Next up, Christine Allen talks with Katie McGinty, a former secretary of the Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection under Ed Rendell. She previously served as chair of the White House Council on Environmental Quality under Bill Clinton. She was an advisor to Al Gore during his presidential campaign and has received Gore's endorsement in her race for Pennsylvania governor. Since 2008, she has been in the private sector, working with several energy-related firms.
Katie McGinty, welcome to Take Note. Chris. Thanks so much. Thanks for having me.
You have a Bachelor of Science degree in chemistry from St. Joseph's University and a law degree from Columbia Law School. What were your ambitions to do with those degrees when you graduated?
Well, you know, I'm all about technology and inventing solutions to tough problems. When I think about the great work that I've been privileged to do on the environment, for me, it's about encouraging young people to think about how can you build a new car, a new airplane, a new building that achieves its purpose without adverse impact on the environment. And that's where my background in academics has come into play in a big way, finding those solutions that solve the problem and invent new things at the same time.
You're probably best known to our listeners here in Pennsylvania as Secretary of the Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection under Governor Ed Rendell. What was your most important accomplishment in that position?
Well, you know, it's all about taking down that myth of it's either jobs or the environment. So we set out to say, listen, we want to clean up the air. Can we do something that does that while creating jobs? And we became the number one state in the country in building wind energy and the number two state in the country in solar energy. It was 3,000 good jobs that drove us forward on the economy while offering a much cleaner energy option. It's that kind of thinking that's been at the heart of my career. And I think it's important to shatter those false myths and get us working in a direction that tackles problems and puts our best ideas to work.
You were also chair of the White House Council on Environmental Quality under President Bill Clinton and an advisor to Vice President Al Gore, who has endorsed you in this Pennsylvania governor's race. What have you learned from your experiences at the national level that you would put to work as governor of Pennsylvania?
Well, first, you need to have a vision. And I think for the United States of America, I hope and pray that we can get back to a place where the United States is leading the world in solving tough problems, whether it's problems like global warming, where instead of being behind the curve, that we're stepping up and offering significant ideas and solutions. Putting that together, though, Chris, with the state level, is where the rubber meets the road a little bit more. And you can get tangible. You can find those students at Penn State, for example, that have a great engineering idea that enables us to dial down greenhouse gas pollution and build new technologies, for example. I kind of like that combination a lot, where you have a big vision that inspires people forward, but you're close enough to the ground where you can work with students and businesses to actually build the solutions.
After working on Al Gore's presidential bid in 2000, you left politics for a while for the private sector, working with a number of companies, Weston Solutions, Element Partners, NRG Energy, and others. What did you do there, and why have you come back to politics?
I don't think it's good to be a career politician. I think you ought to walk in other people's shoes, gain other skill sets and experiences. And I'm really proud in my run for governor here that I'm bringing both that government experience as well as private sector experience. And second, in terms of the work that I got to do, I was very active in cleaning up and redeveloping abandoned factories, for example, that leave a hole in our community. And instead, in Pittsburgh, for example, there's a brownfield or an abandoned factory that I was involved in redeveloping when I was secretary. It's now the home to Google, in one of the biggest outposts of Google on the East Coast, bringing those properties back to productive use. But having that private sector experience, I think, critical in politics as well as government service, having both. And then the privilege that I've had in the private sector of building good properties and opportunities in neighborhoods on places that had been left behind by previous or old industrial activity.
If you are elected governor of Pennsylvania, what will be your top priority?
Chris, we've got to invest in education. Education is the linchpin to prosperity. It's a linchpin to our economy. It's the linchpin to our ability to compete as a commonwealth in a very competitive world. When we've got great universities like Penn State, I take huge issue with the Tom Corbett who proposed cutting those institutions by 50%. We've got to invest back in preschool. We've got to put money back in terms of K through 12. I've proposed a program to enable those kids who are not going to be a two-year degree or four-year degree earners to be able to have apprenticeships and learn hands-on job training and skills. and then also propose some new scholarships and grants so that especially our middle class families might have some financial support to send their kids off to college. It's just vital. Invest in those institutions that are a huge competitive advantage for us, and then enable our young people to get the very best education that they can get. And that would be my top priority.
And where will the money come from for those investments?
Well, two things, and I'm glad you asked that question because we need to be specific about these things. First, we're the only state right now that does not impose a reasonable shale severance tax for those shale gas companies that are operating in our state. And I have proposed a plan to do just that and dedicate every penny to preschool and elementary and high school, restoring those cuts that Governor Corbett has imposed in our education system. And with respect to apprenticeships in college, you know, there's been a debate about our liquor stores in Pennsylvania. And I guess most people say, well, geez, what's the state doing in the liquor business? But I would modernize. I wouldn't privatize. I wouldn't sell those stores off. I'd modernize them, extend their hours, enabling them to be more customer friendly. And with those revenues, about $80 million in new revenues, that's how I'd fund the new middle income grant program and the Dream Scholarship Program.
Are you concerned about the economic impact of a Marcellus Shale severance tax?
I do think we have to be smart about that. I think that the shale gas, if it done in an environmentally sound way, can be a competitive advantage for us. That's why I have specifically proposed my tax so that it is reasonable. It's at a level actually a little bit less than our neighbor, West Virginia. So we will keep our competitive position relative to a competitor like West Virginia in shale gas. But even that reasonable tax raises about $700 million a year in its first year of being implemented. So these are critically important dollars that can and should be had and put to work for the people of Pennsylvania.
As governor, what would you do to bring more jobs to Pennsylvania?
You know, I do think that education is key. Businesses want to know that they are going to have a talented and trained human capital pool, if you will, to hire and run their business for the long haul. So one is to invest in education. Second, I think we do need to be competitive with respect to taxes. And I would provide incentives, especially for new small businesses. You know, we've got really smart kids graduating from Penn State and Carnegie Mellon and Drexel and all of our good universities, but they go off to Boston, Austin, and San Jose. And what I would do is say, hey, plant the seeds of your business in Pennsylvania, and we'll make investment in your business tax-free. As you make your first $100,000, for example, in your new business, that will be tax-free to you. We're going to partner with those young entrepreneurs to keep them here. That, to me, would be a top priority because, after all, it is the new businesses, the small businesses, that are the greatest engine of job creation.
You said you'd like to raise the minimum wage in Pennsylvania. Will that cause job losses?
Well, the exact opposite is true. If we want to have any chance of revving up our economy again, the economists are now really clear that in the kind of prolonged recession and really slow recovery we have seen, we've got to get that consumer purchasing power revved up again. Consumer purchasing is 70% of our economy. But if you make the minimum wage today, your purchasing power is less than it was in the 1960s. So I have been the leading and most aggressive of the Democratic gubernatorial candidates in saying we've got to pay people more so that they will use their purchasing power to stimulate business and grow our economy. And I think that economists are now 100% clear that unless we do that, we will not see the kind of recovery we need for job growth and to get our Commonwealth moving in the right direction. And I will say, Chris, that experience tells the tale. The last time that the minimum wage was raised in Pennsylvania, it was under Governor Rendell, when we were number 7 in the country in job growth. Governor Corbett opposes the minimum wage increase, and we have sunk to 48th in job creation. Let's invest in our people. Let's give Pennsylvanians a raise. And when we do, we will see our economy grow.
Pennsylvania leads the United States in the number of bridges classified as structurally deficient. What would your plan be to deal with the state's infrastructure needs?
Job number one for me would be to protect the dollars that have been identified by the legislature now for roads, for bridges, critically important, Chris, mass transit. I know my own dear dad, that's how he got to work every day. It's vital. If we want people to work, they have to be able to get to work. And I also know for young people who don't necessarily want to own a car these days, if we want to keep bright young people in Pennsylvania, we've got to give them mobility and transit options. So I would invest those dollars that have been identified. And I think we have to look beyond just roads and bridges, by the way. Our water infrastructure needs to be upgraded and repaired. And I've proposed some innovative public-private partnerships to get the private sector also involved in helping us to upgrade our infrastructure so we can compete and win.
What needs to be done to protect voting rights in Pennsylvania?
Well, if the court has not already fully overturned Governor Corbett's very misguided and hurtful voter ID law, job one as governor would be to certainly see that law repealed. And I would go to the exact opposite direction. Instead of putting roadblocks in the way of people who want to be engaged in their community and exercise their civic responsibilities, I'd make it vastly easier. I'd enable online registration and voting. I'd enable extended voting hours. I'd enable same-day registration, for example. All the tools that are out there and proven that enable people to be engaged as we want them to be engaged in the future of their Commonwealth. I also would take advantage of the fervor that I think is out there among citizens of Pennsylvania, establish a citizens' commission, and get the gerrymandering out of our legislative districts. Make it so that every person's vote really does count. And instead of having these districts that look like an ink blot test, we would have them really represent the people of Pennsylvania. And we've got to do that to make it so that everybody's vote really does count.
In the last few seconds here, the Democrats in this race have fairly similar positions, but why do you think you're the right one to be the Democratic nominee for governor and to be the next governor of Pennsylvania?
Look, talking about things is one thing. Getting things done is a vastly different exercise. And I'm pleased and proud that in my career working in Washington, after Newt Gingrich took over the House of Representatives, it was then that I was able to work, find the common ground, get major new improvements in safe drinking water and food quality written into law as secretary here in Pennsylvania with a Republican legislature, enabling Pennsylvania to have legislation, first industrial state, passing legislation using renewable energy, cutting mercury pollution, putting us at the top in terms of states that were leading on critical issues. That's my track record, finding the common ground, pushing hard, and getting things done. If you care about education, if you care about jobs, if you care about the minimum wage, you don't want a governor who's just going to talk about it. You need someone with the proven track record of working across the aisle, getting it done. That's been my career, that's my track record, and that's what I especially bring to the vital issues that we face as a Commonwealth.
Katie McGinty, thank you very much.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
That was WPSU's Christine Allen talking with Katie McGinty. She is one of four Democrats vying for a chance to unseat Republican Governor Tom Corbett. Next week, we'll hear from the other two Democratic candidates, State Treasurer Rob McCord and Congresswoman Allison Schwartz. To learn more, check the links on our website, wpsu.org/take note. I'm Patty Satalia, WPSU.